I was one of those who was interested to respond. And the questions ranged from how do you feel about the preparation? And it was a very in-depth, it took me about half an hour to answer this sort of questionnaire. It was a very in-depth questionnaire. But your feelings, and she was trying to explain, well, sort of just before you press out, tell me. And I wrote her an email asking her to get a copy, but she wasn't too happy to give you one. She said, when it gets published, I'll send you a copy. You'll be the first one on the list, which she didn't want it to get out. But I think that I'm sure that many of you have read it over the weekend. But if not, why don't you turn to the second page? And on the fourth paragraph, okay? But while it depicts Orthodox feminists as thoroughly devoted to a mastery of rabbinic literature and intellect, the study reveals a sharp generational divide over the future of activism and considerable resistance to some of the movement's signature innovations. The fissure is fissures between what the study calls the mothers, the first wave of feminists, mostly in the 50s and older, and the daughters. Well, I describe, since I grew up in the 50s, I can say that's the grandparent generation. And the daughters were in the 30s and 20s, which I just treated as kids, right? While the younger, those are in the 40s, my apologies, you don't belong anywhere. While the younger generation has eagerly taken to the new intellectual options won by the older feminists in the Orthodox world, where teaching Talmud to women was once taboo, the daughters are rejecting women's prayer groups and activism on behalf of what we know. As one younger woman put it, we take a more respectful approach to our life. Now, it's not, now let me just say a couple of things. I don't think it's true that the younger women are not. Don't have problems with no. I don't think that's what he means. Talk about an activist. An activist, when they would refer to as proactive, trying to get behind things that sort of force the rabbi's hands to take, try to push for things which are borderline, questionable, like some of the work that Rabbi Rachman is doing, and some of the work that perhaps Rabbi Antelman are doing that are clearly borderline, clearly highly problematic. Way beyond the consensus of the Orthodox rabbinate, and a more sort of, as he said, more respectful approach to halacha. The divide between the mothers and the daughters, I feel very pleased, because in footnote 285 of an outstanding paper, no, you don't have it. Footnote 285, but a distinguished paper written by Furrer and Furrer on women's prayer groups. Let me read you what we wrote. Our many conversations with women across America, active women's prayer groups, reveal that in many, though certainly not all communities, the generation of the daughters, now in their late teens and 20s, are substantially less interested in such groups. These younger women do eagerly attend when some special occasion or event is celebrated, be it a Shabbat or Seven Abad. Bat Mitzvah or Shabbat Kalah or a woman's Megillah reading. Nevertheless, they are only marginally involved in the tefillah group on a regular basis. While this trend is unquestionably worthy of further documentation and analysis, various interim interpretations of these facts have been put forward. One possibility is that it is a result of negative social pressure. The daughters fear that the involvement in such groups would stigmatize them as women's livers, affecting possible future shidduchim, or employment possibilities. Now, don't make light of this. This is not a trivial factor. I know that there were women who, for instance, went to Brabender's, who had a slightly more difficult time finding the right boy, because just because they went to Brabender's, they were given a certain stigma. They all turned out okay. I'm just saying that in the fact that they went to Brabender's was a hitch. For other people, going to BJJ is a problem. But another BJJ is Jacob of Jerusalem, right? Okay. I'm just mentioning that this is not a trivial issue. These women feel, they have to understand, these generally dealing with the second word, and it's going to mesh with the next piece later on, where I talk about women being more involved in learning. Now, if these women are more involved in learning, they're going to want to marry men who are more involved in learning. Men who are more involved in learning tend to be more conservative. It's small. Right? And that has some of it. As I said, they've altered that order. Another relates this phenomenon to the fact that the second generation, unlike many of the mothers, has benefited from extended periods of intensive higher Jewish education. On the other hand, these daughters are dissatisfied with what they view as the incompleteness and inauthenticity of the women's prayer service. On the other, they are substantially more attracted to advanced Torah scholarship, which they value as more permanent and genuine. Put simply, they aspire to being Talmidot Chachamim rather than Chazaniyot. And I think that in fact is something that she also hints to in this sentence that we read, that since they're more into Torah learning, they don't have the need to what they view as a quick fix, which is not real, it may give these women, they have a real need. They want to be involved more spiritually, more actively in Judaism. For them, the quick fix, that is the way they can respond, is by having women's prayer groups. The daughters who have had the opportunity of much more Torah learning, which is much more mainstream now, view that as the way of getting their high, their spiritual development and high, and therefore they have less need for the prayer groups. I remember when the generation, I grew up in the generation of power for the people and student power and the big activism. That was clearly in the late 60s, early 70s. By 10 years later, everybody was out of it and everybody was back. They were saying everybody had left these groups and SDS had fallen apart and people were back into self-fulfillment. Okay, I don't know what's happening in the 90s and the 100s, okay, the 2000s. I don't know where people are going. I think, it seems to me that self-fulfillment is still, I don't see the mass movements, and it's very difficult also to judge from Israel to, I really do agree.
Feminism came out of
the
response in part to what was going on.
Oh, in the 70s. The 60s and 70s.
Right. And the 80s, 90s, and whatever. I see my own kids, that they're over, they're teenagers, but they're Israelis already. I'm going to a woman's album, but I'm going to go short. They don't have that, it's not a drive for them. It's not going to
be. Okay, let me just continue. In this regard, Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik, Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik verbalized on many occasions to believe that public policy issues aside, the women's energies are being misdirected in the battle for prayer groups. These intellectual and spiritual energies could be more profitably and permanently invested in Torah scholarship. Indeed, the Rav actively supported women's involvement in all areas of Torah, studying in some another in the Talmud Torah at Stern College for Women. I wrote this, and I actually cited this to Sylvia, just saying that I was glad to see that she really, she has the numbers to prove that what we were speculating was indeed true, and I felt very good. So I'm sure. All right. Now, let's turn to the next page, page 3. On the top paragraph here. Despite the unanimity on the positive aspects of women engaged in Jewish study, the stylistic approach, which has mostly followed the rigorous Lithuanian model of classical non-Hasidic yeshivas, is now drawing fire. About one-fifth of the respondents expressed concern about women becoming trapped within the intellectual confines of a masculine approach rather than bringing to their studies a uniquely feminine, feminine vantage point. What does she mean? Well, she doesn't, this 20% of those interviewed were women who felt that women should learn Torah differently than men. That men have, there's a man approach to learning Torah, and they didn't want the women to be trained in this Yeshivish Lithuanian style, the women had a different vantage point. Yes? That's 20%, the other 8% is the most
important.
The question is whether it's valid. Is the Lithuanian approach or the pluralistic or an analytic approach uniquely male? I don't think so. I don't think there's anything uniquely male about studying Torah, say, in the way Chaim Brista, which was conceptualized the concepts. It's a very legalistic approach. I mean, you accept law, it's made up of concepts, and Chaim Brist was very much into, for instance, of analyzing what the concept, what the fundamental principle here, what the fun, I don't know if it's male or female, I don't know. But you have to understand that that is, as you point out, is very typical feministic philosophy, which maintains that there's something inherent to the gender that molds the way you think. But that's, you know, that is, I read several articles in the New York Times Magazine section which talks about this problem. And it said that this is the worst type of chauvinism that's possible. Because what it's essentially saying is that when the men said, you know, you women all think alike. Or when the man said, that's the way women think. You know, this essentially, I would say, if you understand, it's a black is beautiful response. It says, yeah, we do think differently, and therefore we should cultivate that sort of thinking differently. I remember that there was and this was one of a series of articles. There was an article about PMS. There was a period in the United States where the women were using this PMS defense, that they were more irritable, that they could not have responsible for the murders they did because they had their PMS. Excuse me, this was very common. I know it may sound funny to some of you, but, right? And the article, okay, in any case. Yeah, it was sort of an insanity. So the article, I don't remember whether it was William Sapphire, brilliant piece, or somebody who was, you know, he said, you know, this, our defense merely proves what the men have been saying for the last 5,000 years. So yes, it is, right? It's a very problematic approach. One would hope that intellectual pursuits are honest, you know, are truthful, not...
Yeah, but on the scale, on the scale of the there's been a lot of talk about that, not by you now, but that the way that the boys' education is going, it's not right for all the boys of all the
And
that maybe they're stressing too much tomorrow.
You're right. But
I'm sure you can find 20% of the people involved in men's education.
I would agree with you. I just don't think it's a gender issue. I think it's an educational issue.
Yeah.
And I want to know that as parents, raising children.
Oh,
yes. There is a major crisis going on now in Jewish education. And I think anybody who has parents in the schools is aware of it. How do you keep your kids interested in Judaic studies? The feeling is that it's an innovation and it's a traditional approach and it's not up to date. They're finding in the yeshivot, the tichoniot, I mean, very hard time, guys interested in learning Gemara, learning more expensive, And it's not true. And I talk to your son, I talk to a lot of other people who are in education, and they tell me it's
Okay.
What? No, it's not. It's more than that. You understand what the alternatives are. Let me give you an example. You understand what I'm talking about. Almost all of you have seen the Ten Commandments, right? You saw it when it first came out, right?
And
I'm
a video
now. You're depraved of the country.
Right.
And my grandchildren know. Well, has anybody seen it recently? Have you seen the spring water?
Yeah, that's
it seems so fake, so kitschy, so. And I remember when I saw that when I was a kid. After Star Wars, it's nothing. it doesn't do a thing. Well, I want you to know, you have to remember that your kids are learning Gemara after they've had all this virtual reality and all this, this Star Wars, and their mind needs stimulation in a way that's not, that cannot be said, just by sitting in front of the book and learning. Once you're motivated, once you're, you understand the importance, then it's all right, then the intellectual pursuit itself can stimulate you. But until you're into it, until you're hooked on this stuff, it's very difficult, and they're trying to find all sorts of techniques. So unfortunately, learning to succeed and learning Gemara, you got to sweat. And you don't sweat by being entertained. But to some extent, you have to be entertained long enough to make you get some things. It's not a trivial problem.
Esther, they would choose different things, different aspects of what they're learning and emphasize that then men do and they learn.
I would only argue, but let me put it this way. I would, and I say this proud, I consider myself a feminist, and I actually really do believe that intellectually there are very few differences between men. I do believe emotionally that there are some differences, but as a broad generalization, not on the individual woman, anatomy. I think that there are clearly experiences that women have, emotional experiences that men don't have. I think an understanding of this is beautiful, there's some beautiful agarita in Margaret Hall, dealing with Hannah, fighting back and forth and have a child. And one time I was learning it with women, and they said to me that if they didn't know whether they could squirt it, that it's the understanding, the pathos, that they don't think that men who haven't had the experience of childbirth or the yearning to have a child or the difficulty of having a child and the need of fulfillment of having a child would understand, but the Gemara does express it. They say, no, because the Gemara, you don't always have to be poor to understand why. You don't always have to be rich to be rich. I think that, men, some of the, as I say, some of the best friends are women. And I think that if I love someone, if I love my wife, if I love my daughters, if I love my mother, then they can transmit to me those experiences, some vicarious. It's not the same. Women have told me, and I've seen with my own eyes, and women carry a sacred Torah differently than men. Men tend to carry a sacred Torah standing up, and women tend to hold it more like a baby. I think that's only experiential. I don't think there's something in there. If a young woman were taught to hold a sacred Torah, they actually don't hold anything. Her next closest reference for love and affection is holding a baby this way. I don't know whether that is something inherent or... I'm very skeptical. I don't want to make it... Clearly everybody draws on their experiences. I would say that men in Torah have been trained to think one way. Okay, women generally who don't have the heavy yeshiva education get more into Tanakh and more into Medrash, and maybe their approach when they cross materials, they use the tools they learned in one to adopt it. I don't know. That cross fertilization is wonderful. It leads to tremendous creativity. One of the interesting phenomena in the modern generation, actually it started earlier, was using Talmudic techniques to approach Chumash, to approach Midrash. And it creates a very different approach. It's a conceptualization of concepts. It's very creative. I don't think it's pshat, but I think it's very interesting, very creative. I for instance, we had this outstanding lecture given by a leader of the Zohar Kabbalah. There's no question, I mean, anybody who was there, it was very clear that her training, her training in literature, the approaches she used, the approach she used in education and psychology, all came to bear in a very rich way in her approach in understanding the text. I don't think that's something unique to a woman. I think perhaps because she spent more time studying literature than I find it hard to accept that intellectually is something inherently female. That in my way, it's a question of training, where you get this. But we can't really judge. I think we're now the only cognitive woman. I think we have to wait another 20 years. 20 years from now, then we'll all get together. We'll see whether that's really true. I think it's a fact that. Generally true. Certainly in the younger ages, the girls are much brighter.
Yeah, I got
the
light.
No, I'm not surprised. The women certainly mature intellectually much faster. That's why a girl is about to 12 or 15. The women clearly, as generally true. By the time they get married, it's usually, my wife is like this.
What?
Okay, let's continue on to the sixth paragraph. The second paragraph, I apologize. Only 38% cited women's tefillah groups as a major change. The low number supports a recent study by sociologist Sidney Lang, which we read, published in the religious educational journal Pendat, which found that the students at Yeshiva University Stern College for Women responded to feminist tefillah groups with a sense of ambivalence, confusion, and rejection. We actually read that. Skip down three more paragraphs. Not a single one of the women, rabbis and scholars interviewed for this study, believed the tefillah groups to be the most important result of feminism. Many women and men expressed the belief that the groups themselves were transitional phenomena. Now this is really, did you read the stuff when this came over on the women's tefillah network? Did you see? There hasn't been one discussion of this paper, I want you to know. This is very upsetting, and the silence is incredible. I mean, again, I'm on the news to you, if this came over, this particular sentence should be very disheartening for women, because it essentially said, I don't think that the women's groups are going to die. Not for what? Because it answers a need for women. The analysis tells us that it answers a true need for women who aren't introverted. The women who haven't had the opportunity, they want to be involved socially. What can they get? They can't sit down with the world. Now, some of them can start coming to shiur if the shiur are available, right? But that's not what they want. They don't want to be coming to a shiur. If you come to a shiur, you're passive. Unless you're learning the text, you're analyzing it. They're generally passive. But they want to be involved. That's the my learning, my involvement. Hey, women seem together in a base medrash and stuff. That's me. I'm doing it. So they're going to share it. Okay, very passive. That's not the type of spiritual fulfillment that I think these women want. They want the active involvement. I'm doing it. That's my analysis. But it seems to suggest that it's not going to be used, it's never going to be mainstream, it's never going to capture the imagination of policy. Skip down two more paragraphs. Unlike their non-Orthodox sisters, the Orthodox feminists had no interest in becoming rabbis, and only 5 to 10% advocated changing the language of the prayer group to a more gender centered, be more gender centered. Now that business of more gender centered, that's a big issue. You became diehard feminists. Talk about diehard feminists. We're all have to listen. That bothers a lot. But feminism bothers. I mean, if you're a sense that that's how Hebrew works, but okay. I think that this—that's about an overweight. I think that this is a very, very interesting survey. As soon as the complete one comes out, I'll be happy to do it. Okay. Now the last thing here is by Mrs. Gila Ackman. Let me say a little bit something about the Gila Ackman. She and her husband Akiva are both extremely knowledgeable people. They write, this is from the discussion group. There are two, I'd say, pretty important discussion groups, Torah discussion groups. There are a lot of them. But two of them, they're important because I subscribe. One is called Male Jewish. And the other one is called Avodah. And Avodah, you have a lot of Rosh Yeshiva, a lot of extreme scholars, Rita Berger and Rabbi Bechoff from Skokie, and Rabbi Tabori, who's the professor of Talmud. People who are extremely knowledgeable. They're also, I would say, it's 95% men. There are several women who are involved in this discussion group. One is Rabbi Misha Shalom Kuvlio, and the other is Eli Atwood, and there's also several other women, the names escape me right now. Write in and follow discussions with Africa. In this particular piece, Eli Atwood argues that, you know, a woman who finds fulfillment in the role as a Jewish woman, who understands her role as being doing the Ritzon Hashem. In all seriousness, she wants to compare that role to the role of the Kohen Gadol. And she finds an analogy in what women do and what men. Now, I've shown this one person to someone who's this is funny. She can't be serious. Oh, she's been serious. And I think I only brought this because this is such a counterpoint to a feministic approach that it deserves being read. It deserves being read because this is a woman who truly and honestly accepts her role as a Jewish mother in a very classical sense, as a woman does show in the full sense of the word. And her desire to, and you can read it, I'm not going to go into the details, but her desire to compare this to the other, because that's what's on the show too. What she's doing is also part of a good other show. Whether it be the cooking and the baking and the garments that she wears, or doing laundry, or cleaning, you know, too much attention to cleaning out the cinders. All this, she takes very, very seriously as part of the book of the Shem, and she feels especially.
It's a little hard to set up with the bullshit. I mean, Nikki will tell us that very psychologically. I'm doing this stuff. Will I say that?
I tell you something. Just something interesting. Although I generally agree with you, there is no modern woman today. No modern woman today who has to be a Jewish mother. The options are so wide. It's like saying, I say, kol hakavod, anybody who wills to stay in the state of Israel is a tzion ben hakadosh. Because the options to leave are so easy and so available. A woman who decides, says, I view my role, traditional role, as part of, as Avodah Hashem, the full sense of the word, wills it to be, and that's not eternal.
That's not true, by the way, because it's not just you, because we all have choices. Take the call, people go to Shabbos, people change, let's say 60% of the time,
mystery novel.
But some of them do. They also need to turn necessity. I don't think it's true.
Some
women are just passing. I mean, they never grow up. They never did that one thing. I see in the community that I know, they're happy if they are, and happy if they're happy. Or even if they're not happy. You know, I think, you know, but they gave them all the dinner on the table. So that's what you're doing.
Or in the English, to page 242. One, no, and in the English 242 and the Eagle 145.
Yeah.
145.
So
in
English,
RN,
in English
242. All right. Now, we're going to now tackle a piece of material that what I ask of you to do is to please try to remain as calm as possible.
That's a dead giveaway for you.
I have a rough time teaching it because I find it so very distant from our perception of things that I find it just difficult to present it fairly honestly. I've been doing a lot of research on that. I think that I now do understand the material. I understand what's going on here. The change from what it was in the time of the Chazal to what it is now is so radically different. We're talking about what we're learning from. It's so radically different. It's things that have just totally turned on their head that you have to understand what went on here. I mean, this is really, it's me a katze and a katze, from one end to the other. So what I ask you to do is, let's go through the material. Try to analyze it in a very calm, disinterested sort of fashion, and watch the drama, and then try to understand what's going on here, what's being transformed. There are a lot of historical factors that are going to come to play here. A lot of historical factors that have come to play, which are very, very fascinating. We'll talk about it a little bit.
The Gemara Bavli in Kedushin. Ha'av
chayav livno lelamdo Torah. The Mishnah says that a father is obligated to do several things to his daughter. One, it says to his son. One is to circumcise him, to pick him a bed, to teach him a trade, to teach him Torah, and some say to Torah. So Rabbi Akiva says some say to Torah. Okay? So on the verse that he's obligated to teach his son and daughter, so it says, Ihi melalan delo mechayva. How do we know that a mother is not obligated to teach her son? The Gemara's dichtiv, v'limadetem u'limadetem. The Gemara says, if you look at the pasuk in the Chumash, in the Siddur, oh, we actually haven't. And look at the first of the Sifrei. It has a citation from the Torah. The pasuk is v'limadetem u'dam. How is it spelled? Without a yud. It could be read equally ulemadete. So the Gemara is learning from the fact that it's written k'tiv chaser, not k'tiv malei. K'tiv v'limadetem ulemadete. Kol shemitzuve l'lmod mitzuve l'lameh. The kol she'eno mitzuve l'lmod eno mitzuve l'lameh. That whoever is obligated to learn has the obligation to teach. And he is not obligated to learn, not obligated to teach. So the Gemara asks, V'ihi, and she, minalan delo mechayva lemelach nafsha. How do we know that she doesn't have to teach herself Torah? All we saw from the first verse is that the father has no obligation to teach his daughter, son, his daughter. Right? It says, V'limadetem otanu b'nechem, v'lo b'no
tetem. I think it's usually learned from someone. You don't sit
down. What? There's a big discussion in the Talmud. Generally speaking, the word benechem, unless there's some good reason, refers to male children. Because if it meant non-discrete, non-gender children, it's a zav. Zaracha, and your seed. So the while in modern parlance, the Nechem is gendered. So that's the problem. Listen, let me explain to you. You're not asking a trivial question. The Malbim and many other proportions. See, I mentioned the Malbim because he was a linguist. And he struggles with these particular problems. What made Chazal say? Part of the problem is that the word B'nai Yisrael can also come to exclude non-Jews. See, the word B'nai Yisrael sometimes in Chazal comes to exclude non-Jews, sometimes in B'nai Yisrael. Can only exclude one thing. Those are the rules of Drash. Okay? B'nai Yisrael below B'not Yisrael. Or B'nai Yisrael below Akol. Generally speaking, it means B'nai Yisrael below Akol. Under certain circumstances, it comes to exclude women. You have to find out what are the rules. The Malbim is one of the first to struggle with it in this particular case. I don't remember, it was quite common, and I don't remember. But your question is not important. Okay. So it says, "Dichtir v'limadetam, v'limadetam, u'limadetam." Now we're learning it the other way around. Kol shacherim mitzuvim l'lamdo, mitzuvel l'lamed et atzmo. All those are obligated to teach. Others are obligated to teach them. Are obligated to teach themselves. Kol she'en acherim mitzuvim l'lamdo. So since we already know that the father is not obligated to teach his daughter, so therefore she's not obligated to teach herself. Okay. Uminayin, שאין אחרים מצווים ללמדה. And how do we know, says the Gemara, the Kedushin, that others are not obligated? Teacher, I'm not cut, as the Pasuk says. This is the same as the Sifri said. This is the Gemara merely quoting it inside. Okay, look at the note on page 1019. Page 1019. Look at the note number 10 in and 7 in English. לפי מסקנת הסוגיה, קיימים שלושה אופני פטור לאישה. There are three ways in which women are exempted from Torah law. אין אדם חייב ללמד את ביתו תורה. So the very broad that a father is not obligated to teach his daughter Torah. אישה אינה חייבת. אישה אינה חייבת ללמוד תורה לעצמה. Who is not obligated to teach herself? Three, גמל, מצוות תורה לבנים אינה מוטלת על עד. But a mother is not obligated. Now, it doesn't say that the mother can't teach her child. It doesn't say there's big prohibition here. It's an obligation. We're talking about obligation. Even obligation mostly has to do with can the bedin throw a father into prison for not teaching his daughter Torah? Or can the father refuse to teach the son Torah, right? Who, the parents don't teach their kids Torah, who can the bedin put pressure? And so they can only put pressure on the father and not the mother. Okay? In custody battles, in a Jewish court, and when a child gets a certain age, the fact that the father has the obligation to teach his son's Torah is a consideration in how where the children go. And very often in a Jewish court, what happens is the son, male sons, if they're at a certain age, go with the father, and the girls go with mother, and he asked me why. I answered because they want to split up the children, and the father has done the experiments. He has to bring them to the sons. That's how it works. So these are not, these are the obligations have also some clearly to Vata Yelid, that what best for the child plays a very important role.
The child has to go with the father, or
if the court is convinced that the father is not a good father, they won't say. Talk about a situation where all things being equal, right? They're good people, they can both.
But if
right?
The mother promises to send the teacher or whatever, I don't know.
The father makes a claim and says, so. It's a claim and
it comes up today more in Cassie Bell's where one is more religious than the other. That's where that goes to play. When the woman says, I don't want to be poor anymore, and then he can come in and say, well, you know, she's not going to teach my sons, and then he can.
But ironically, it doesn't work with the daughters. It's very.
She has a moral claim on this part to have a daughter.
Yeah, but the question is, when the kids are young, then she claims to about the. But these are all she claims to about the yellow. That's the mother.
Six.
Six. The age of six. That's what it's got to boil down to, but we'll have to see that gel a little bit more in the text. Until now, we're just sort of hypothesizing. But there's no other alternative. I mean, she's got to know how to function. She's got to know how to function.
She has to have been halakha without my wife.
That might be. That might be. The obligation. Okay, right now, it's going to get even more stickier when we get further. But as things stand now, okay, our analysis would suggest that all, she doesn't have to learn Torah, text, but she's got to know how to function Jewishly. Again, she can learn from her mom. Mom will teach her about kashrus and part of the mishpacha, and will teach her about everything that she needs to know, her father too. But she won't have to open up text, won't have enough to open up a book. Okay, yes. Okay. Let's go on. Uvdot kayamot nashim b'kiyot b'chadamah. Okay. It may be true that women are not obligated to learn Torah, yet we know that the women who are outstanding for their scholarship. One of the earliest references are to the Bedot Slavrat. This is a resource number Bet, we're page 146, and in English, 244. Okay. Tana. Bedot Slavrat Chachmaniyot. The daughters of Tzlachad were very knowledgeable. Shalafi Sha'ad Dibru. They spoke up at the appropriate moment. They knew when to speak. Sharei Moshe Rabbeinu Yoshev V'Doresh B'Farshat Yevamim. This is what, so the Medrash now fills in, what is it that catalyzed them to come just when they came? It says Moshe Rabbeinu was teaching the rules of a Yevama, of levirate marriage. If a brother dies without any children, then the other brother has to marry the wife or do chalitza, and if he marries her and have children, hey, amru lo. So they said to him, im kibben anu chashuvim, if we're considered like a son, tana lenu nachla kibben, you know, we deserve to inherit like a son. They know that the point is as follows. He's saying, look, im kibben anu chashuvim, and therefore you don't do yibum, then tana lenu nachla kibben, give us a nachla like a son. V'im lo, but if we're not considered like sons, titya baby middle, let our mother have yibum, because we're only five daughters and our father died. Well, the actual answer is that yibum has nothing to do with sons or daughters, it has to do with children. Zera. Okay? Darshaniyote. Right? Darshaniyot means they knew how to learn dry from the text. Sheyu amro, ilu haya ben lo dibalu, aval haya, vat, le ben, ilu haya ben lo dibalu, afilo haya vat le ben lo dibalu. If there was a daughter to the son, then we wouldn't have spoken. All right, the point is that they knew that, the question is what happens if there was a child, right? There was a child. The child died, but before the child died, it had a grandchild. It had a child.
No.
It makes a difference. Even if there was a bat, what?
No, even if we had a brother, a niece, from a brother of ours, and the brother was dead, then we wouldn't
have spoken. Even if there was a son, even if the son had left the daughter, he would not have spoken. Yeah, there was a son, and that son had a daughter. All right, that's not it. The point is that the Gemara speaks about the Benot Slavad with tremendous respect. These women are sharp and clever, they knew halacha, and they knew how to argue with Moshe Rabbeinu. And furthermore, they weren't afraid to argue with Moshe Rabbeinu. Right? They're in there. Yeah, Moshe Rabbeinu. All right. Now this is a very famous Tosefta. The Tosefta is Tanaitic literature written at a time a little bit after the Mishnah, edited after the Mishnah, which fleshes out the Mishnah. It says, Tanur me'ematai ta'ato. A tanur, an oven, from whence does it become clean? Like, I mean, does it lose its כתומה. אמר רב חלפת איש כבר חנניה, אני שאלתי את שמעון בן חנניה, ששאל את בנו של חנניה בן חניה, ואמר מי שיסיענו ממקומו. When they take it from its place. When they take it from its place. So if you look down, they take it down, look at the note, Akirato mimekomo nechshevet b'shvira. See, we're going to say two of the stories. The halacha is as follows. If you have a utensil, it becomes tumeh. Okay? If you break the utensil, and you no longer have the utensil anymore, then you lose it to its tumeh. So he says, if you have this tanur, which is, you know, it's on the ground, and then you pick it up, it's no longer off the ground, it's no longer tanur anymore. So he says, as soon as you pick it up from its place, it's this akira, this uprooting it, it's no longer a tanur anymore, that's equivalent to it having been broken. Ubito omeret, and his daughter of Nochanani Vatragam, Misha Yifshat, Miyafshet et Chalukot, when it takes off its chaluk. First of all, the daughter's name, Buriah. Gruria was the daughter of the famous scholarly daughter of Hananiah the Tragedian. Okay? And she said, when you take off its garment, its halut, look at note 15, Nitan listapek basarat tiachatanu amachabro yachat. Okay? What they used to do is they put bricks in or pieces of clay together, and then you put the tiach on top, which held the whole thing together. If you should take off that tiach, Buriah said, okay, that's good enough. That's considered that the kli is broken. We don't have to go into the details of why this is, okay? Kishenemru dvarim lefnei Rabbi Yehuda ben Baba, when they said it in front of Rabbi Yehuda ben Baba, who was the scholar of the generation, okay? Amar yafeh amarav pitom yifra. The daughter said better than the son. Okay, the daughter of Hananiah, the Shpanina, the Shpanina, the Shpanina, the Shpanina, the son. And, by the way, there are several expressions we find in the Gemara, where similar concepts. If you look at note 16, at the bottom, it says, Doma de Yanenu Yafer Maradruria, to suffocate it. Okay, and also in other places, there were several of the word, the wisdom of Druria. Also, there was another woman whose name was Yalta, who was the wife of Rav Nachman, Gemara Chulin, and also the Gemara talks about her praise as being extremely knowledgeable. Okay, so in any case, we have in the Talmudic literature clear references to women who were extremely scholarly. Which now they had to learn some of them. Where did they learn from? Okay, so it seems that while it would seem at this stage, while they were not obligated to learn, they were women who sat and learned. They knew they could compete with the men in their learning, or that they were even better. Let's now look at the next step. Sefer Sibur HaPetachya, Rab Shmuel, Ein Lo Banim Ela Bat Echad. This Rabbi Shmuel didn't have any son. Okay, we're moving through Jewish history, and this is what we're going to show you for you. He didn't have any sons, he only had a daughter, Bikiyah, she's outstanding in Mikratz Tanakh, Ubet Talmud, V'im Lamedet HaKriyah L'Bachor, she teaches Chumash of the Tanakh to the boys. He's Gurab B'Binyan Derech HaMachad, she's in one building, and with a window open, but Talmidim Bachutz L'Mata, Bein Roim, they don't see her, but she's teaching away, okay? Now we're moving then a little bit later, the Drisha and the Prisha. This is already moving in the 1600s, okay? And this, in the Hakdama of the Drisha, he writes about his mother. This is a selection from a much longer piece. Imi marati marat beila zal, nafshat b'tzwa chayim tzwa, whose soul is tired of eternal life. Hu yari lachlok lakavod, I want to talk about my mom. Liyot lanu nizecher the dorot, so to remember leman yom v'dun mi mena kol benav Yisrael, the pen yasun, the how good Jewish girl should have, woman should have. וכל ימי ההם בימי החור ובימי הקיץ, עמדה תמיד בזריזות קודם אור אל היום, שהוא רגע רגע פרולי, כמה שעות, והרביטה להתפלל בכוונה גדולה בתפילות ובתפילים, שהיא דברת שיצאים, פריירס, ובידה מפתח עזרת נשים, שהייתה ראשונה מבית בתקשי הדקי לעזרת נשים, כשהיא זו לזמור לפרשת השעות. והאחרונה שיצאה הוא נולס פרולי, שעה אחת או שתיים אחרי יציאתה מבית קשור, hanging there, and down the way, and whatever she did, in the shul. אחר תפילה לא שמה נשא לשום דבר לבטלה, רק מחייל אל חייל, she's going from strength to strength, עוסקת בתורה, פרשה של ימי השבוע, בפירוש רש"י ושאר מפרשים, כי ידוע לכל תמיד, תמיד אבי מורי זן ואוכלי שולחנו, as everyone knew that she was an expert in all this stuff, anybody ate at the table, שתמיד אשר היו פותרין השולחן בדברי תורה, what I used to be, or they say, דברי תורה at the table, הייתה עוזרת כגבר חלצר, she would gird her loins like a male, במשא ומתן על דבר תורה. She would let the guy who said the דברי תורה have any peace. She would move out and out. But she was in on the discussion. Look at that. ולפעמים אשר המציאה מדעתה איזו פשעת, מתוק, מדבש, נופת, תותף נסמותה. It's a beautiful description. And from time to time, she would make up her own פשעת, right? איזו פשעת מתוק, מתוק מדבש, sweeter than honey. נופת, תותף נסמותה. It was like her lips dripped of this of the sweetness. ובפרט בדיני נשים ובלכות מיטה הייתה בקיאה, כמעט כאחד מבראשים לרוב עמיד הכל. Okay? And she, like one of the בעלי הוראה. I mean, she had a high level of proficiency in all the הלכות. הביטו נא הוראו את מה שהרגישה בטעות הנשים בהדלקתן הנרות ביונן. And he goes on to say, but a particular way that he believes the woman are lighting candles wrong, and yet, if you want to see, and we'll stop with that, and look in Perek Chet, and there's a Perek Chet, Chapter 8, section 11.
Ate the bracha, and then put the candles. Like the way you like honey candles.
because it's over the sea time. Because all right, but that's not, at least in the Ashkenazi group, that's not the Ashkenazi group. Ashkenazi, he doesn't, right? No, I don't know. The answer is I plead ignorance. I haven't gone learned the sugya. Some, I'm planning to, that's one of the subjects we'll talk to. I'm talking to about that kind of light candle, which is a very complicated issue. I just wrote something in the room school network about it, and it's, I'm not going to go into my Chabadnik and my young girl lighting candles. It's a very complicated issue. In any case, The issue here is that on Shabbat, since women, you can't do it over the seer time, because if the minig is that women make sure they make the bracha, then they can't light the candles. So therefore, what do they do? Since hanorah from the candles is also part of the mitzvah, okay, so what they do is you light the candles, and sort of blocking out the light, covering your face, and then you get the hanorah. So it's like the getting the hanorah is part of the mitzvah, and therefore it's still a shtickle a little bit over the siyata, okay? But he says, but on yotif, what's he arguing? But on yotif, women, even if you're metabol yotif with a brother, you still don't like the candle. Right, the problem is what to do with the match. You can take it from a fire, right? Or if you bench yotif. But the point is, nevertheless, there's a problem what to do with the match. So maybe you can put it down on the trail and let it burn itself out. Right, let it burn itself out, or wherever. Anyway.
I agree.
There's just parallel read that the justification for doing it on Shabbos, and not the way you did it on Shabbos. But she argued that's not the right way to do it, because you can do it differently. Hatinach, that's right. Hatinach b'Shabbat, it's all right on Shabbat, Shachar, Bracha, Asur, Shabbat, Akai, you get the Bracha. You can't write. But Yom Tov, Shemuta v'ad the candela, Yom Tov atzmo, you can light the candles on Yom Tov, even if you're a Yom Tov. Mutav shetavar v'kat ha-nerot, ki tikuna, liyot ha-bracha, over the seder. Do it right. I have a problem with the match. So either you put the match down on the tray and let it sub burn itself out, or if you have like some people light a candle and you're like, you put the candle down, I mean, you can, there are ways of doing it, you can do it. And Shabbos, there's no way you can do it and still maintain the custom of Mugamashan of the Brahma. But here, you can do it properly, so do it properly. Hata'uta Shniya, what's the second mistake? Masha Nomad and Hashim Ladigna Roten Shoyomto Achar Shipalua called Avit Kodama Achila. He says there are many women, he says, who light candles for Yom Tov late. The Zeno Nachon de la Yom Tov Rishon. This is not proper. And Yom Tov Vishon, V'yotem Tov Medina Ladik Nerot Kodem Tfilat Arvit, the Kabbalah Yom Tov Ad Lakatah. Far better to do it earlier and accept Yom Tov earlier than the night before. If a woman did that, she could write it later. It's not clear. But she says that's not a problem. And anyway, the reason why we brought it is not to discuss Yom Tov, but here the Jewish is calling his mom, saying this is not Lachen Yom Tov. These are women who are clear. She was obviously not just enough, she just didn't know, but she was knowledgeable into the halakhic considerations that went in, and there are all the reasons and like it, she's going through the analysis. This is a woman who's highly trained. So we have, there is in fact a very famous list of extremely knowledgeable women who studies Raju, so she's extremely knowledgeable, and we'll continue with the subject.
I'm subject that was ingrained in elementary school.
Never heard of it.
Never
heard
of it.
I lost an elementary school in my life.
Ever. That's the difference between going to a girls' school where they concentrate on it.